Good morning, it's Shirley Gutkowski at Crosslink Radio, where we talk about health from the eye teeth on down. And today I'm offering another segment in our series on sugar, but I'm going a little bit off track because I'm going to be talking about sugar myself today. I don't have any guests today. We're still working diligently to get people to talk about the different kinds of sugars. I found a lot of information on YouTube recently, and I don't know, I think I may have mentioned that I went down to visit my parents down in Florida, and once I'm down there, and I don't know, it's not my favorite state, and it's a little bit stressful to live in your parents' home for a week after you've been not living there for most of your life anymore. And so I got home on Friday late, and all of Saturday I just had a pajama day, and I watched television and watched some documentaries, and I spent pretty much the whole day kind of immersed in other people's ideas. One of the shows that I was watching was the new show on NBC called Aquarius with David Duchovny. That's kind of a fun show. It's kind of hard to keep track of all the pieces and all the players. The final episode that was available on Hulu, they gave all the episodes in advance, so there are 12 episodes. The last few episodes were very, very dark, not just in feel, but in in cinematography, and I don't know if I'm just old or what, but it just is really hard to see what's going on when it's so dark on the screen. I don't know if I like that show or not, but I managed to putz away the whole 12 episodes there. And that's on Hulu. I really, really love watching Hulu. I love watching the shows there. They do have commercials, although the commercials are not as obtrusive. I do pay $8 a month, $9 a month for access to Hulu Plus. And somehow I get the feeling that maybe I shouldn't have to suffer through commercials, but some of the shows don't have commercials, and you just never know which one. So that's what I did. What the other half of the time I did, though, is to watch some documentaries on sugar. I found them to be very interesting and supportive of what we've been talking about so far on these sugar shows on Crosslink Radio. One of the most outstanding things that I heard were this idea that sugar is a toxin to the human body, and that there is still a lot of misinformation out there on sugar. When we talk about sugar, we're talking about sucrose, and we've mentioned before when Dr. Peldiak and I were doing an episode about how we're really kind of using the word incorrectly. Sugar is one thing, but sucrose is the one that everybody complains about the most. And then after that comes high fructose corn syrup, because the fructose part of the sucrose, because sucrose is glucose and fructose together, right? So that's that molecule. And the fructose part of it is the part that's a problem. And when you're talking about fructose and then you take another step into the high fructose corn syrup, you're adding a whole nother level of drama to this whole sugar episode. One of the things that they talked about in these documentaries was the fact that in the late 1970s, or was it in the early 1980s, when this low-fat thing started to really kick in, the obesity rate increased substantially, because what the companies were forced to do was add sugar as they were taking the fat out. Fat is good tasting, regardless of where it comes from, and it enhances the palatability of the food. And when you take all of the fat out, you're stuck with something that isn't palatable until you add sugar to it. I've not been a person to add a lot of sugar in my own cooking. I have a 10-pound bag of sugar that I know I bought at least 5 years ago, and it still looks like a 10-pound bag of sugar. I use xylitol pretty often. And even that 3-pound bag of xylitol will last well over a year, probably 2 years. And so it's not something that I add directly to my food. But when you're looking at foods in the grocery store, you'll find that those low-fat foods have replaced that with sugar. One of the documentaries, I'm going to list the documentaries here, and you'll see them in the show notes too. You are, let's see, Sugar, Elephant in the Kitchen, Daily Bread, Can the Body Handle Gluten? The Best Documentary 2015 from National Geographic was also a sugar one. The Elephant in the Kitchen one is by Dr. Lustig of Sugar, the Bitter Truth, Fame. Sugar, the Bitter Truth, Fame. And that is a TEDx talk. So you can find that probably by searching sugar and TEDx. And the Daily Bread, Can the Body Handle Gluten, was done by Dr. Ford, is also a TEDx episode. And the Best Documentary 2015 is a National Geographic that I found on YouTube. It's really worth your time to look at some of these. There are some, you know, rah-rah sugar episodes. There was one episode that I watched of, I think it was out of Canada, where they were talking about this scare tactics that are being used by Dr. Davis of the Wheat Belly fame, and how wheat is not all that scary and we shouldn't be having a problem with it, yada yada. But then after that, I watched this gluten episode by a separate doctor, right? And it's a totally separate person, independent. He just barely made reference to Dr. Davis's work and some of the others. And so that was very, very grounding, I guess, because I think you need to look at both sides of everything, which is why I decided to do a weekly kind of an episode on sugar, because you do need to see both sides. And sugar substitutes like xylitol, erythritol, and all this other stuff can be very healthful and not damaging. And they are lumped together with sugars. And that can be problematic because you're missing out on some of the most important things that we have as humans, and that is the ability to go for sweets. That's an evolutionary kind of when it's programmed into yourself. That is a real important feature there, because it is programmed in so that we do look for healthful foods. The problem comes in when we start to separate things, which is what we're finding in medicine as well. Dentistry has been separated out from medicine, and look what the problems that has caused. In medicine, separately, they have divided the body pieces out into specialties, and there's nobody to bring everything back together. And when you're looking at nutritionists, you're talking about other people to fit into this thing, and nobody believes everybody else's stuff. So it's really complicated when you start pulling things apart. In the example of sugar, when you take orange juice, for instance, and compare it to oranges, and you look at the equal amount of sugar in the juice compared to the orange, you'll have, you know, 5 or 6 oranges in one glass of orange juice. And that sugar is fructose. And orange juice, especially if you take the pulp out, is really just drinking an orange-flavored sugar beverage. So you're not getting the benefits that you think you're getting when you're using the fruits and vegetables, mostly the fruits, as a juice. It really just go down to sugar. It just zips down and turns into fat, especially fructose, right away. The liver decides that it's going to store it for later. And that's why the fructose is so horrible, according to Dr. Lustig. So here I am sitting here listening to all of these documentaries. And I had a very interesting following day. And I'll bring that around after I describe this one other part of the episode. I do want to kind of pull this all together in a big circle, because there's other messages to have here. One of the examples that they used in one of the documentaries was this idea of sugar's effects on the brain. Sugar meaning fructose, and well, I'm sure they meant sucrose. Okay, sucrose is the white sprinkling sugar, which piece of sucrose is fructose that's the most damaging. So what they did is they fed one group of rats high fructose, high sugar content beverage, and they were allowed to have it at will. And then the diet of the other group was lower in sugar or had no sugar for those rats. The rats that had the diet without the sugar were able to be put into a tub of water and find the landing spot within just a few seconds. The rats that were fed this high sugar diet couldn't find anything. They just kept swimming and swimming and swimming and swimming and swimming until finally somebody rescued them. So it was a little bit of a demonstration on the effects of sugar on the brain. They also did a study of this family, one family study, and they put everybody into an MRI machine to see which part of the brain became activated, a functional MRI, which part of the brain became activated during a sugar episode. And they did also find that the parts of the brain that were activated after sugar were the parts of the brain that were, that were in the pleasure areas of the brain. So what we see every now and then is an MRI, a functional MRI image of a brain on cocaine and a brain on sugar, and they're both yellowish in the same areas, and the area is huge. But what this documentary showed, which was a little bit more believable, were smaller multiple areas of activity on these brain scans. So it does show up there. It doesn't have to be magnified that way. We just need to know that it does activate that part of the brain, and I don't think anybody's surprised by that. What was a little bit surprising was when they did a little test on a group of high school basketball athletes, and it was a group of girls, and they had a red team and a blue team, and then they had these girls play basketball for however long until they got all nice and warm and worked up, and then they gave each group a beverage. One was sweetened with regular sugar and one was using an artificial sweetener. And so the sugared beverage obviously was a high calorie beverage, right? So if it had 3 or 5 teaspoons of sugar in there, that was, you know, a higher calorie than this intense sweetener that was on the other side. Now, this is not to say that intense sweeteners are better or sugar substitutes like that are better. But they did give both of these groups that beverage to drink. They drank it all down, and then they let these groups loose on a snack table, on a buffet of things to eat. Everything from more sugar stuff to, I don't know, I think they had some kind of fruits and vegetables options on there as well. Then they took those tables, they removed all of the food, and they calculated how many calories were left on the table. Obviously, they had an idea of the number of calories that were on the table before the girls ate it. The table that had the food on it of the girls who drank the sugared beverage consumed 1,000 more calories over and above the calories that they consumed in the beverage as compared to the group who had the non-sugared beverage, the sugar substitute beverage. I think that's pretty astonishing. The thing about calories is that they do accumulate, and sugar calories get turned to fat faster than fat calories. And when you're drinking a beverage that has calories that stimulates more calories to be eaten, that's not a good situation. That's really not a good situation. I don't know that there's a good answer other than avoiding all beverages that have any flavor at all and just sticking to water, which is why Coke and Pepsi both have gone into the bottled water arena so they can still make some money off of people who are giving up soda for drinking water. And there's problems with the way that they bottle the water. And I don't know, the problems just get worse and worse as we go. And that's kind of why a lot of people are doing this paleo thing. It's too hard anymore. It's too hard to know what to eat or how much of it to eat. It's just really, really super hard. So those were the couple of things that really stood out for me with respect to these sugar episodes that I'm providing here on Crosslink Radio. So let's take a short break here and I'll come back and talk to you about what happened to me on Sunday then after watching all of these documentaries. I'll be right back.
If you enjoy the content and point of view, please leave a favorable review on Stitcher, iTunes, or Blog Talk Radio. To have Shirley be your personal oral health coach, you can reach out to her via email, shirley@crosslinkradio.com. And now, back
to
the show.
Thanks for getting back to me. And I was just talking about the sugar documentaries that I had been watching over the last weekend. And I have to say that it was enlightening and it was a little distracting while I was watching it. You know, oh my gosh, oh really, oh my gosh, oh really, you know. Stuff like that. They really didn't go into any sweeteners that would be alternatives to sugar. But what happened to me the following day is, I think, worth another conversation. And for clinical dental hygienists, I think this may be a huge issue and a huge wake-up call and a huge kind of a new way to think about how we're relating to patients. So I get to the store and I'm doing grocery shopping and I ate before I left, so I wasn't starving or anything, but I just still, I don't know, was in recovery mode or whatever. And I get to the checkout lane and I think to myself, you know, I should really get some Oreos. Now, I think I told you that I have an allergy to milk and I have an allergy to eggs. So there's really not a lot of sweets that you can have with no eggs and no milk or milk products. The most common thing that I run into is butter and milk solids, the whey, right? W-H-E-Y, whey. So that's in just about everything. So it's not that I crave sweets all the time or anything like that, but sometimes you just want to have a cookie or something. And I found out that Oreos don't have, which really makes you wonder, right? Oreos have no butter, no dairy products at all, and no eggs in them. Set you up right there. But I just couldn't shake this thought. And I thought to myself, how in the world, after spending however many hours watching people, scientists, dissing on sugar and telling me all these horrible things that are going to happen with sugar, and I just can't. I'm standing here thinking to myself, well, I could have some Oreos. That's just sugar. And I was just kind of flabbergasted. And I was thinking to myself, you know, what you think is. And there's really no way around it. If you're thinking about sugar, and that's all you're thinking about, as I did the previous day, that following day, all you're going to think about is sugar. The brain cannot accept negatives, right? So when you think to yourself, don't eat sugar, all your brain thinks is eat sugar. So it's the same with cigarettes. If you see all these don't smoke campaigns, all your brain hears is smoke. And that's what was so difficult about those anti-smoking campaigns, because you still had to talk about smoking. You could talk about all the detrimental effects of smoking and all the negatives of smoking, but the brain is pretty positive and it reacts much better to positive messages. And you can't have a positive message about smoking without really talking about smoking. So it was really very difficult. And I have to say too, that these episodes that I was watching use cigarette advertising and the addictive nature of cigarettes in the same breath as what was happening with sugar and how it's being forced upon us and blah, blah, all that stuff. So I was really just struck by that idea that the brain only thinks positive and that you are what you think. So I spent the whole day thinking about sugar, and the following day, that's all I wanted was to have sugar. That's really just what I was looking for that day. There's not a lot you can do opposite from that. You know, I ate a bunch of fruit, didn't matter, don't care. I don't know. Who knew it was such a struggle? Or who knew it was going to be such a struggle? So I would encourage you all to watch those videos and then also try to find a video that talks about how the brain works with respect to thinking. That's another really interesting topic that can help everybody make other adjustments. So for instance, when we're teaching our patients how to get the biofilm off of their teeth and telling them to avoid sugar, we have to give them options that are positive that don't include the word sugar. So we have to get off of this idea where we tell patients don't eat sugar, don't eat sugar, don't eat sugar, because they're going to be really attracted to the sugar and we're going to be shooting ourselves in the foot. And that's really just where that is. I think that we can do a lot better for our patients than just telling them to avoid sugar. We have to give them options and not use the word sugar. So for instance, you would say, please start using xylitol. Please start using xylitol products. If you see erythritol on the label, please use that. These products will help reduce the amount of biofilm on your teeth. That's the kind of messaging that we have to do. And if you're still one of those floss Nazis, then don't use the negatives around the floss, that floss is going to be helpful on here and helpful on there. I don't know how to get around getting patients to floss better. I really just try to teach children how to floss. I think that's probably the only appropriate place to do it. But once people are 30 middle years old, there's no point in trying to teach them to floss anymore. They have to go up to the next level. So those are the kinds of things that I was thinking about. I also this past weekend recorded an episode, well, not an episode, but a little 26-minute video on my new mastermind group. You can find that on my YouTube channel at Shirley, I think I have it Shirley Gutkowski, and that's the newest video that I have available up there, and it has a cute little picture of my granddaughter and the hygienist standing behind her holding the mirror in her mouth in the reception room. I don't know, it's just an adorable picture. And so those are the things that I've been working on. I'm also working on my consumer book. I finally have gotten onto an idea on how I want that to go. So, boy, I tell you, that's been a long dry spell, really long dry spell. I really thought I would have something completed much, much earlier, like last year, 2 years ago. This last book really burned me out. So the Guided Mastermind is 4 weeks, 1 day a week mastermind where we talk through guided topics to get everybody to a higher level of clinical dental hygiene experience. So that's real important to me. I wanted to offer something to hygienists where they could bridge this oral systemic gap and treat their patients with an oral systemic mind frame so they could treat their patients a little bit better. So look into that. I'll have a link for that in these notes underneath this audio as well. The book that I'm writing is tentatively titled The Field Guide to Your Dental Visit. It's for patients. I'd like for it to be about 100 pages. I'm looking for art right now. So I'm doing that. And I'm just really focusing in on some new areas here that I think are going to be more beneficial to clinicians and to patients alike. So join me, won't you, in all of these new endeavors. And when you find something that is of interest to you on Twitter or Facebook, please feel free to share and retweet everything that I post up there. The intention is to have healthier patients. And the best way to do that is if we all work together to share these resources. So this is going to be a short episode of Crosslink Radio. I hope you make the most out of the next couple of minutes. Looks like we're at about 25, so you've got 5 minutes break where you don't have to be pedaling on your bike. Thanks for joining me, and we'll talk soon. Bye.